Hello, and welcome to another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm your host, Dean Welty. Rita Dunway is on special assignment, so can't be with us today, but we're so pleased to have a very special guest with us, Chris Friend, who I'll introduce in just a minute. But our subject today is the battle for values in Richmond. And here is a little background on why that matters to all of us here in the Valley. The Virginia General Assembly convenes in Richmond this coming Wednesday, January 11. It will be in session for 46 days, ending on February 25. During that time, 140 of Virginia's elected legislators, comprised of 40 senators and 100 delegates, will consider over 2,000 proposed laws that could affect all of us. Some of those are very good. Some of those are very, very bad. Now, a handful of those legislators come from the Valley, represent us directly. They include Senators Mark Obenshain, Emmett Hanger, and Jill Vogel, plus delegates Dickie Bell, Rob Bell, Ben Klein, Todd Gilbert, Steve Landis, and Tony Wilt. And here's why this all matters to all of us. The law is a civil guide to moral behavior. By the way, those who say you can't legislate morality, that's what the law is all about. The law is a civil guide to moral behavior. Therefore, if our legislators pass good laws, we win. If they pass bad laws, we lose. So they need our prayers. They need our help. And it's that simple. So, Chris, you might have a comment on all of this, add your own, but I'm so glad to welcome you back to put all of this together for us. By way of background, Chris has been with the Family Foundation of Virginia since 2002 and is now the Vice President for Government Relations and Communications. A big job. Chris is one of the top experts in Virginia for the topic that we have today, the battle for values in Richmond. He was with us a year ago to talk about this very same thing, and we can talk a little bit about the last year compared to this year. But in recognition of his outstanding service in this ongoing battle for values, the Valley Family Forum was so pleased to present Chris with its prestigious Wilberforce Award at our annual God and Country dinner last year. Chris, what a great occasion that was for us. Now, getting right to you, I know you're in the thick of things as you prepare for the General Assembly, so thank you again so much for taking the time to be with us on the Crossroads program.
Dean, it's always great to be with you. Thank you for all the kind comments and award and just recognition. Very much appreciated, sir.
To get us started, Chris, and for those who may have missed your earlier visits with us, tell us a little bit about the Family Foundation and how you operate and some of your major issues.
Sure. Family Foundation exists to empower families to apply biblical worldview and founding principles to politics and culture. We want to connect citizens and churches with the political process here in Virginia, make sure they're informed, aware, engaged, and activated, contacting their legislators on key issues, understanding the values and issues that are before the Virginia General Assembly, educated in voting and in elections, and just generally engaged in this process. And we, again, just try to educate, inform, mobilize people to do that. And then we also directly advocate for the values that we share here in Richmond. We have five principles, life, marriage, religious liberty, parental authority, and constitutional government. And we try to advocate in each of those areas.
Well, Chris, it sounds very much like what we do with the Valley Family Forum, doesn't it? Isn't that a surprise?
But Chris, I think that, you know, you work from a local perspective and stay in touch with people that are on the ground in the Valley, and we're here in Richmond to try to be your voice when you can't be here, and you're the muscle that we have, so to speak, in the battle that rages up here.
Well, and I particularly like what you say about applying the biblical worldview and the constitutional principles to our culture. That, of course, is what Crossroads is all about. I'm reminded, Chris, when we talk about the importance of the law and the foundation of the law, going back to Blackstone, who was the English jurist and really the founder of American law, and he said, if a law does not conform to God's natural law, to the laws of nature and of nature's God, it is no law at all. And I'm sure that's what you're trying to pursue with these five principles.
Well, we recognize that culture is in chaos. And part of the reason our culture is in chaos is the separation of our law from any kind of intrinsic eternal value. And if we can just make it up as we go along, and if it's just based on might makes right, 51%, then that becomes quite dangerous when that 51% wants to impose something on people that is dangerous or deadly. And so I think Blackstone obviously was right in that if our law doesn't have its moorings and eternal values, then it's going to bring about exactly what we see. We see a chaos, a culture just in chaos and in shambles, and looking for leadership to try to bring us back to some kind of shared value system.
Well, Chris, and that really brings us to the next question, how all of this plays out in the General Assembly. As we mentioned earlier, it convenes on a Wednesday, so you're going to be in the thick of the fray. But I wonder if you could just give us now, just going back to the mechanics of all this, what is the current makeup of the General Assembly in terms of party affiliation? And then, secondly, how do these two parties divide on the family values issues that you have referred to in terms of their voting records?
Sure. You know, so many people are focused on what happens in Washington, and especially right now with a new president and, new administration, all the changes that are coming, and people are very focused on what's happening up there. But what happens here in Richmond with the Virginia General Assembly is just as important and has impact on our daily lives in a variety of ways. And right now, the General Assembly, the House of Delegates, is made up of has 100 seats. 64 generally held by Republicans. There's two open seats right now, and on Tuesday, January 10th, there'll be special elections for those two open seats, but it should remain 64 Republicans, 36 Democrats, and then the state Senate has been 21 Republicans, 19 Democrats. There's one open seat right now, and again on January 10th, there'll be a special election. All indications are that probably will remain a Republican seat and remain 21 to 19. And then you have, obviously, a Democrat governor. Now, if the Senate should flip to 2020 in this special election, then the lieutenant governor, who's a Democrat, becomes a tie-breaking vote and Democrats take a majority. And then you have a tension between a Republican-run House and a Democrat-run Senate, which we had a few years ago. Not a lot gets done in that case. On values issues, really, Dean, like much of the country, like Congress, over the years, these issues have really become issues that see a lot of polarization within the General Assembly. There are very few bills, if any, on life or religious liberty or parental authority that find bipartisanship. Unfortunately, the two parties have really become very polarized on these issues, where in the past we may have a few pro-life Democrats that would vote for a pro-life bill. We just don't see that anymore in Richmond, which is unfortunate, but it is reflective of, I think, where we are as a culture and as a country right now on some of these issues.
Well, Chris, just for our listeners, just to point out the wide gap between the Democrats and the Republicans in the General Assembly, you issue a report card every 2 years that tracks the voting records of the two-party members on these issues. I'd like to point out to our listeners that in the 2014-2015 sessions, which is your most recent report, out of a possible score of 100, the Senate Democrats averaged only 14 out of that 100, compared to the Senate Republicans, who scored an average of 92. That's 92 for the Republicans, 14 for the Democrats. The spread in the House of Delegates was very similar, according to your report card, where the Democrats had an average score of only 20 compared to the Republicans with an average of 93. Now, that is a huge difference. And, Chris, I'm just trying to get my mind around that. How do you explain this huge divide between the two parties? And related to that, what can we do to bridge that divide, especially on the core values that we used to take for granted?
You know, Dean, I think we just saw an election that showed a very polarized country. We just have very distinct visions in this country between Republicans and Democrats, especially on values issues, especially on the issues of human life and unborn children, on the issues of definition of marriage and sexuality, of religious liberty, even of constitutional government and how large or small or limited or powerful our government should be. And I think we've seen that polarization grow over the years. And there's just been very little agreement on many of these issues, which is unfortunate because I think in some areas there is some agreement among the voters, and there are some places where I think we can find that. And all we can do in Richmond really is offer opportunities for people in the legislature to vote according to their conscience, according to what they believe their constituents want them to do. And so they have that opportunity every session. They'll have an opportunity again over 46 days starting on January 11th to do that multiple times. Unfortunately, though, I think there is just such a deep divide on these issues in our country right now, and that there's no immediate solution. I don't think there's a quick fix. I think we're seeing, and we're going to continue to see, the fallout from leaving the values that we once shared. And, you know, I find it interesting. I mention this often when I speak. Every year, different groups, whether it's Gallup or Pew Foundation or different polling groups, poll the American public on, do you think the country is headed in the right direction? And every year, without fail, two-thirds of Americans vote, no, we're not headed in the right direction. But then they turn around and often vote for the same people in office who are keeping us in that direction. Now, they just changed that to some degree. We'll see how that works out over the next few years. But you can't keep repeating the same thing over and over again and expect a different result. But I do think people intrinsically recognize the country's headed in the wrong direction. We have an answer to that. We have a solution that, yes, we are headed in the wrong direction. We've left the values that we once shared, and we're not going to bring back any kind of unity in this country until we have that shared value system. We can only do so much politically, Dean. A lot of this has to happen in the churches and in our neighborhoods, and really neighbor to neighbor, family to family, in showing that the values that we have are the values that are best for this country. We can't expect, honestly, politicians to do this work. We're going to have to do it in our churches and our homes first.
Well, Chris, it's very sobering. I wish there were an easy fix, but there's not. And for our listeners, you're sort of foreshadowing a conversation that we're going to have next week with Bishop E.W. Jackson. As you know, he's the founder of STAND, Staying True to America's National Destiny. He has just unveiled a new theme for STAND, which is calling for a Christian awakening in America. I think you've suggested that this is more of a spiritual problem than it is a political problem. And unless we turn back to God, we will continue to have this huge gap between those who support Judeo-Christian values, who support our constitutional principles, and those who want to go their own way. Am I right?
I think you're absolutely right. And I think that, you know, that we've seen this this spiritual need grow more and more in recent years. And I think that the church is going to have to stand up, and the church is going to have to be a real voice of truth. And it's interesting, Dean, I was actually reading an article just this morning about how the churches in America that are growing and thriving are actually the theologically conservative
yes.
churches, while the more liberal churches are dying on the vine. So people are desiring this truth, and we just need to be able to present it. But that said, on January 11th, we've got 140 legislators who will be coming to town, and folks are going to need to know what's going on when they get here.
Well, and Chris, we really depend on you and the Family Foundation to keep us informed. We'll come back to that at the end of the program to help our mm-hmm. listeners understand how to do that. But let's bring it back home. We've talked about the 140 legislators, 40 senators, 100 delegates. Let's talk about our own Valley delegation. I've named them at the beginning, but where do they fit in this battle of values? Are they helpful or harmful to your efforts to promote and defend our core pro-life, pro-family, pro-freedom values, or do you find them a hindrance? If so, let's name some names and let's call them out.
If we had a general assembly made up of Valley legislators, the Family Foundation wouldn't have to exist.
Right.
The work would be done, and you have some of not just they don't just vote right, you know, they're leaders
right.
Up here in Richmond, and they carry key legislation. They lead key committees. They do so much. And I think that your listeners should be very proud of the legislators that you send here, and their voting record in general on all of our values issues, especially life and marriage. You know, Delga Klein and Delga Gilbert have carried some of our key pieces of legislation over the years. Delegate Dickie Bell and Rob Bell both have done so as well and have done fabulous jobs. Stephen Landis. I mean, it just on and on.
Yes.
Mark Obenchain, all have carried key pieces of legislation for us and led on these key issues. And I think I've got nothing but good things to say about all of them. And, of course, I'm going to see them next week, so hopefully they'll hear this and they'll be happy with that.
Well, Chris, thank you. And you know, it really has to come back to the voters of the Shenandoah Valley. They recognize
sure.
that these are important virtues. They recognize the character of the people who represent us. And I just have to say, going back to my introductory remarks, they need our prayers and they need our help. And we're going to, as I say, get into some of the specifics about how we can do that. But Chris, you mentioned specific legislation. We only have a couple minutes, I'm sorry, to cover this. But let's divide it into three groups. You've got at least one new initiative they're going to be supporting. Then I'd like to go to a second group, which is old legislation that didn't get approved last year. You're reintroducing. Then I'm going to go to a third group, the bills that you're having to fight against. So let's go to the first one, new initiatives. What do you have?
Well, there's a couple of things actually this year that we're going to be working on. One of them, and some of the bills are still being introduced, and we're still really learning this issue, but we have some problems in our public schools in Virginia with kids that are being disciplined in ways that, you know, Dean, when you and I were in school, if we got in trouble, we went to the principal's office. Probably you didn't, but I was a regular attendee in the principal's office. And, you know, there were some punishments that we received. You know what we're doing now? We're having these kids arrested, and they're getting charged with crimes. And certainly if there's violence, that should happen, but often it's just disruptive behavior. And we want to look at this issue and make sure, number one, the parents are involved from the beginning and are informed and have the opportunity to get the assistance they need to help their kids, because a lot of times parents are the last to know, and that's a real problem. So we're really looking at that issue to see if we can help make sure the kids can stay in school, make sure families are very involved in this process. Another issue, and I know this one is dear to your heart, Dean, because of the battles you've led in the Valley over the years, and that is a proclamation or resolution that's been introduced in the General Assembly, and this is something we're actually looking at doing, that names pornography as a public health hazard.
Oh, that's Bob Marshall.
That is something, yeah, we were actually looking at that idea and concept, and actually had some conversations with some public health officials in Virginia. You know, Dean, the problem is we don't just have a porn addiction problem. We have an addiction problem in Virginia, from drugs to all sorts of behaviors that are very destructive, and pornography is one of them. And we just want to make sure that people are aware of the destructive nature of these addictions and what's happening to especially kids, where kids, the average age of first viewing pornography is now 9 or 10 years old, because of the internet, because of phones. And so we want to make sure people are well aware of this.
Well, Chris, the Family Foundation has been a leader on this for as long as I can remember. And we say here in the Valley, we recognize pornography as a cancer that leaves a trail of ruined men, exploited women, damaged children, crime, disease, and sometimes violent death. And I think I saw an article that Delegate Bob Marshall is leading that. We only have about 30 seconds for each of the ones you have to list, Chris. How about the remaining? How about the remaining bills?
We're going to bring back our bill to defund Planned Parenthood in Virginia as much as possible. Again, some school choice initiatives this year and education freedom. And you know, making sure that families have the best opportunity to show their kids. But Dean, one of the key roles we play here is defense and protecting religious liberty and protecting our values and defeating legislation that would hinder those. So all of those battles are going to happen, especially this year, because it's an election year in Virginia. And so you're going to have a lot of fights over these very key issues.
Well, Chris, I'm looking at the list, and I didn't mean we had only 30 seconds to cover all of them, 30 seconds for each, so you still have some time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. What about the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Act? What's that all about?
Yes. I think that bill this year, you know, it's a bill that prohibits abortion after about the midpoint of pregnancy because we believe unborn children feel pain. It's been passed in 18 states, and in most of them hasn't been challenged in court. It's really getting some momentum this year. I think that we see that it can be made constitutional. It can be written as such. So I'm hopeful that that's a bill that we can get to the governor's desk this year and force Terry McAuliffe to say, he said recently that he would veto it, but let's make him veto a bill that the United States is one of only 7 countries in the world that allows second and third trimester abortions, elective abortions. We're similar to North Korea and China in this area. Most of the developed world prohibits these abortions, and it's really ridiculous that the United States is in such company as China and North Korea on that issue.
And I think Delegate LaRock is leading the charge on that one again. Is that right?
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. Yep.
Okay. Well, and it's been encouraging to see what's been happening in Ohio the last couple of weeks with their legislature. Powerful, powerful pro-life legislation that has passed, even including the heartbeat bill that was passed, but unfortunately the governor vetoed that. We've got a governor problem here. We'll get to that if we can, if time permits. One other thing, you mentioned education choice, but there's also the Tebow bill again. Can you review that for us?
Sure. Legislation that over the years we've had and has made it to the governor's desk, but has been vetoed by Terry McAuliffe, which simply would allow kids who homeschool to try out for their public sports team. And, you know, Dean, I think we're making progress on that every year. Most people recognize that this is not going to be the end of the world if we allow a handful of kids who happen to homeschool to try out and play for public school teams. Most states or majority of states do this. Certainly Virginia can figure out a way to do that. And I think even if Governor McAuliffe vetoes this, I think the next governor would sign it, because it's just common sense. It's just reasonable. It's just equality for homeschoolers, and I think most Virginians support this concept.
And also, you mentioned the education choice. Senator Obenchain, I think, is reintroducing his charter school bill. Is that correct?
There's going to be several. I think we'll have education savings accounts and charter schools, virtual schools. And of course, Virginia already has a very good education freedom program, our education scholarship tax credit. There are several thousand kids right now that are in private schools that wouldn't have otherwise had that opportunity through scholarships. People and corporations can make donations to scholarship programs and get a tax credit. We're still trying to grow that program. We want to fix some of the details of that program to grow it even more. But there are kids right now in private school getting an education and a pathway to success because of that program. We're proud of it. We want to grow it, make it bigger, make more people aware of it, and help more kids get an education that they really deserve. So I think education freedom is another issue that we're going to see at the forefront in the coming years. We have some good programs. We just want to have bigger and better programs in Virginia.
Well, Chris, now I'd like to get back to the prospects for some of these bills passing. I was looking back at last year's record, Chris. How frustrating that must have been for you. We had 16 bills that we really thought were good bills, pro-life, pro-family, pro-Judeo-Christian values, constitutional principles, 16 good bills. Only one of those bills made it through the whole process. And here's what happened, as you know full well. There were six of them that got through both the Senate and the House, only six, which in itself is kind of disappointing. But the governor vetoed all six of those bills. Six bills got vetoed. Do you expect any change in that this year with the governor still wielding his veto pen?
You know, unfortunately, I think it's unlikely that there's going to be change. But what it's going to do is present the voters with a very clear distinction for the next governor and who they're going to choose. Are they going to choose people who are going to sign very reasonable bills? Or are they going to choose to continue to have someone that's just going to obstruct and stand in the way of accomplishing the things that we need to accomplish? So, and that's one of the reasons, Dean, that we want to bring these bills back. People will say, well, why do this if it's just going to be vetoed? Why? Because we want people to know exactly the decisions are that they have to make when they go into the voting booth. This is what you're looking at if you vote a certain way. And so that's why we're going to bring these bills back and force Terry McAuliffe to veto them again.
And we do have an election coming up in November. Do you have any comments on that?
Governor, Lieutenant Governor, Attorney General, and all 100 seats in the House of Delegates up for election. So fortunately or unfortunately, Virginia has an election every year. I think right now people are probably pretty tired and worn out from 2016 and the election cycle we just went through. Hopefully 2017 will be maybe a little less, I don't know, rhetorically crazy. But nevertheless, it's an extremely important election year. And I think who our next governor is going to be over the next 4 years is going to set the tone on these and all kinds of issues in Virginia. Dean, if the Trump administration and if the Congress does what they say they want to do, they're going to return a lot of power to the states.
Yes.
We should see a return to federalism. And the question is Virginia ready for that? Is our General Assembly ready for that? Is our next governor going to be ready for that? And do Virginians understand some of the decisions being made in Washington right now are going to be made right here in Richmond over the next few years?
It's just a reminder, isn't it? It's a reminder that our votes matter. Chris, we've got to close it down there. I thank you so much for coming. For our listeners, if you want to keep up with all this, sign on to the Family Foundation Network for your email alerts that they will keep us informed about these. Our Valley Family Forum does the same thing. Go to our website, valleyfamilyforum.org, and sign on. Well, once again, Chris, thanks for being with us in this battle for values in the Virginia General Assembly. If you'd like to listen to the program again, go to our website, Valley Family Forum, and click on the link to Crossroads. Thank you all for joining us for this program. I'm Dean Welty, engineer Robbie Meadows, inviting you to join us again next week. Again, we'll have E.W. Jackson with us at the Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. Until then, have a great week putting your faith into action. Rejoice, 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 rejo